Okay, welcome to Global Expression Podcast, where we have international students interview international professors and faculties to learn their unique journeys to the U.S. My name is Jia Yuyan, and my English name is Angel. I'm from China. I'm a freshman majoring in theater major of Lafayette College, and I'm thinking about taking a double major in economics.
And my name is Zareeb. I am a mathematics and economics major, and I'm a senior here at Lafayette.
And my name is Mikkel Olsson-Berggren, and I'm a professor in the Department of Languages and Literary Studies, where I teach in the German language program.
Wait, can you teach me your names again? Like, how do you pronounce it, like, originally?
Originally, it's Berggren.
Berggren.
That sounds great. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
You want to try a read?
Berggren.
Yeah, it's also good.
Awesome. Okay.
Yeah. Is that in German or, like, Swiss?
That's from Sweden.
From Sweden.
It's a very Swedish name. Berg means mountain, and gren means like twig or branch.
Well, that's awesome, yeah.
That's cool. Okay, so let's start our interview, I think.
Yeah, I can start off. So, Professor Berggren, can you talk a little bit about your educational journey? How did you come to work at Lafayette? I know that you, I think you did your undergraduate studies in Sweden. You know, what brought you here and how did you end up here?
Yeah, it's a story that I can make either really long or kind of short. I'll try to
It's okay. Somewhere
in the middle, since we're kind of still at the introductions. Yes, I did most of my undergraduate degree in Sweden at the Linnaeus University, which is located in a city in the southern part of the country that no one can pronounce unless you're Swedish. Växjö. It's spelled V-A with two dots on top of it, X-J-O with two dots on it. So it looks very mysterious to any non-Swedish person. My major as an undergrad was in political science. I also learned German, like I was also studying German at the time. I started learning German at a very young age. But I also spent a significant time of my undergraduate in Germany. I studied at the University of Passau, and I also did an internship in Munich for a while. And I took my sweet time with my undergraduate degree. I think it took like 6 years for me to finish it in total. And then I ended up in the U.S., and it was completely random. I just had one of my German professors wrote to me and said, hey, there is this like exchange program to go and do a 2-year MA at Washington University in St. Louis. I had never heard of St. Louis before. I think, and like talk to friends and they're like, yeah, because the hockey team, but I'm not really an ice hockey fan. And the deal was to go there, study for 2 years, get an MA in German and teach Swedish at the time. And it just sounded so, I don't know, it all just felt so random that I was like, I don't think I can say no. I don't think I can say no to this.
Right.
Yeah. And then I ended up there and I really liked grad school, something that I did not think I would like. I was felt like I was so done with school after my undergraduate experience. Not that I hated school, but I just wanted to work. I wanted to do something, I don't know, something else. But I really ended up enjoying both teaching and doing grad school work in the U.S. So then I stayed. Then I stayed and did a PhD because they accepted me to the PhD program. And then I eventually ended up here teaching at Lafayette College. Yeah,
that's awesome.
Yeah, so that's the motivation. Like interested in teaching people, and you're teaching German language, right?
Yes.
Okay. Not because of the hockey team.
No.
Okay.
Not because of the hockey team.
Okay. So, the next question is, how has your teaching experience in both Sweden and U.S. differed, especially like in terms of student engagement and educational systems?
So before coming to the U.S., like in Sweden, I taught a bit, like not a full-time teaching position, but like besides my studies, my bachelor degree, I taught German at a high school. Almost full-time, but on and off for a bit. So again, it's quite a big difference between high school and then here, obviously, then university, college level. But so there are significant differences. Like the kind of like intensity and the fast and the fast pace of the US educational system is just a completely different beast that I'm sure you're aware of, both of you as well. So it feels a little bit like comparing apples and oranges, or however the saying goes. But I have enjoyed it a lot on both sides of the Atlantic, so there's that.
Yeah, so kind of going off of that, what would you say was the biggest cultural adjustment you had to make when moving to the US? Because, you know, you came here as a master's student, mm-hmm. just in terms mm-hmm. of, you know, the adjustment you had to make. If you could talk a bit about that.
I mean, when I moved to the US, I was feeling pretty confident that I was kind of internationally savvy.
Wow.
But again, I was like early 20s, you know, nothing could hurt me. The world was, you know, for me to conquer, basically. And also because I had already had quite a lot of experience moving between Sweden and Germany, which now in hindsight are like, yeah, but they're pretty similar in many, many ways. But so I was going to the US pretty confident that, like, I got this. The first thing and the thing that I still think about a lot is that I just had to learn to communicate in a very different way. Mm. I had to learn to make small talk.
Right.
Oh my God. This is like exactly the same experience as mine.
Like I have always been very talkative. Like that's not it, but it's just a different conversational technique. And I have very vivid memories of such things as like people, you know, saying, "Hey, how are you?" And I mean, "Hey, how are you?" It just means hello, right?
Right.
But like, and I have these, and now they make, like, it makes me cringe a bit when I think about it, but like people who would, like, you know, in the hallway be like, "Hey, how are you?" And I would really entertain the question, "How are you?" And like really, you know, explain to them how I was, because that's was sort of what I was used to. Like, you don't just say, "Or oh, good, how are you?" But like, you give some context for it. So yeah, and I mean, there are some other things too. Just, you know, how the making small talk to the cashier at the supermarket or things like that. That was, for me, the biggest cultural adjustment that I had to make. Yeah,
that's a great one.
Yeah, that's a great one. I also like been through this, and I was like, "Why are you asking me how are you? I don't even know you."
But if you want to know, I'll tell you.
Yeah. Okay. So the next question is: how do you feel your experience as a international academic have influenced your teaching style? Like, yeah.
I mean, it's a tricky but good question, because, like, you know, I'm not sure how, like, thinking about how would I teach differently if I hadn't been an international academic is kind of, you know, it's kind of difficult. But I think that it has given me, I would like to think that by going through a lot of sort of humbling experiences myself, by studying abroad, moving around between countries, I have a lot of compassion for my students, and I always give all students the benefit of the doubt, if that makes sense. Like, everything I do when I teach or when I construct a course is like, I always want to give students an opportunity to learn what I want out of them before I sort of grade them or assess them, if that makes sense. It's because I understand that, like, basic things such as, like, oh, you know, do this presentation. Like, it's not that straightforward, because a presentation can look so differently depending on where you are in the world and, you know, your background, etc. And I mean, even more complicated, like, write a paper, you know, that is also papers. I have had to learn to write very different papers depending on
different, like, from structure
structure, voice, you know, linguistic, like, do you use passive voice, do you use active voice,
right?
Do you foreground your argument in the beginning? What is an argument? Do you have a thesis? But, like, some things that I think for people who have spent, you know, the vast majority of their academic career, like, in the US, they just, you know, when they say write a paper, they think that all students understand what they mean.
Right.
Yeah.
What they mean by that. And it also goes like, even such a thing as like, write a summary. A summary also looks very different.
Mm.
Depending on.
So I go in with a lot of compassion and I don't expect my students to know anything until I have taught them.
Actually, kind of thing, that's so great. Like for me as a freshman, it's literally my first year in the US and we are taking FYS in our first semester, right? And then our professor just said, oh, you need to write this paper in MLA format. Yeah. And I was like, what is MLA format? And she's just like explaining to me individually and do this stuff. And also like, because I'm from China and like Chinese style of writing is kind of like not that clear structure, but we use a lot of metaphors and all the stuff. And then like my professor just told me, oh, you need to be like thesis, evidence, and then analysis. So I was like shocked by this. And then I need to change my whole writing style. Yeah.
That makes a lot of sense. And I'm sort of glad you're taking the time. I think it's great to have international faculty on campus because they sort of understand the challenges international students face. And, you know, you're taking that time out of your classes to sort of make sure that, you know, everyone's on the same page as opposed to someone who isn't as aware about that. Just sort of like a personal story or like a personal anecdote, can you share some either memorable moments or challenges from your time teaching at Washington, the Washington University in St. Louis?
Yeah, that was, again, so that was then, I was, how old was I when I moved? I was like 23 or 24 when I moved there. And again, I had some teaching experience, but again, from a high school in Sweden, that's very different from a, you know, an R1 institution in the American Midwest. But I remember that I'm going to start this with like kind of then a, should we say not sad memory, but a challenge and then how that sort of, how we overcame that challenge together as a class. But I remember the first midterm I gave in a, it was in a third semester Swedish class and it was a pretty small group. I think there were like 7 or 8 students maybe. And most of them were older than me by like a decade or 2 decades. They were like heritage speakers.
Wow.
And they took this as evening class. And, you know, so that was a really interesting group, fascinating group to work with. I'm still friends with a lot of them up until this day. But the first midterm that I was giving, like I graded in a way that I would grade Swedish assignments, like or in a Swedish context.
Mm.
And I wasn't aware of just how, I guess, inflated grades are in the US in many ways. So like I gave like some like C's and D's and things like that, that to me, and also like looking at my transcript, my Swedish transcript is full of grades that like in America would be, people would be like, oh, did you do anything in this class? And it's like, no, it's just,
I know.
It's graded very differently or like grades mean something else. And the students were like shocked that like to the point where there were even like tears.
And
I was like so taken, like it was a really, I mean, because on the one hand, something in me wanted to like stick to like, no, this is how you're like supposed to do it. Like I am doing it the right way. But I think I had to like grow from that and understand that like even such a thing as like grading or doing, you know, the assessment part of the teaching work, you have to adapt that too when you go to a different country and a different institution. But I would say that we as a group, they still, I mean, I was like, they're gonna hate me, you know, forever. Mm-hmm. But no, like I remember then later, if it was that semester or the next class after that, because they continued, so I guess they didn't hate me that much. But then for my birthday, they like organized a birthday celebration.
Oh, that's so cute.
For me, like after class, and sort of prepared dinner and some sweets and things for me, because it's like around Easter time.
Easter time is soon.
But for me, like it taught me two very important things about sort of teaching in the US. Mm. On the one hand, it's very different from when it comes to like the culture around grades. But second, it's also really emphasizes a sort of close teacher-student connection, you know, and that there is more, that there is also sort of a personal investment in the teaching, and the students also put in sort of personal investment. It is less anonymous than what I'm used to from Europe in general, or from Sweden and Germany, I should say.
Yeah. Oh my God, this reminds me of my high school experience, like getting all B and C's. It's just a really common thing among like our school.
No, I agree. I think back home an 80 was like a good grade.
An
80 was like, oh, you did well. You got basically an A, and you come here and you get an 80, and then kids are just like, oh my God, B minus, I'm screwed.
My life is ruined. And right. I'm like, no, it's not.
Okay. Are there any cultural or academic practices from Sweden that you wish were more common in US educational system?
Yeah. The first thing that comes to mind is a Swedish custom that is called fika, F-I-K-A. You might like this sort of circulates in social media in different ways. But the practice of fika is to take, like everyone in a workplace, you take a break at some point between breakfast and lunch to sit down for 20 or 30 minutes, drink coffee, and eat some sort of baked good. And you do that like together. And that is like, it's just something you do. You take that break from work, you sit down together, enjoy some coffee and a cake. And sometimes you might also do it in the afternoon, or you do it in the afternoon instead of in the morning. But that kind of like break culture of like, okay, let's all collectively take a break from work, sit down together, you know, and kind of just chill. That is something that I think American workplaces could benefit from, so that it doesn't turn into this like, oh, you're taking a break, but well, I'm still working. Or, you know, that it becomes almost this, but rather than like competing for who does the most amount of work, it's like, let's just all survive till the next coffee break, and then we'll and then we'll do that together. That is something that I kind of miss.
I've heard of that before. I don't think it's real, and it's real. Oh my God.
It is very real.
It sounds really good.
We like breaks.
Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense, yeah.
Yep.
I think back home, we would have like a tea time at like 4 p.m. Where we'd all just drink tea, and everyone in the offices would relax, get together, have tea served, but I guess it's very similar as well. But yeah, this is more of like sort of like a fun question that we have. If you were not a professor, what would you be?
I would like to think that I would be independently wealthy.
Probably
that wouldn't be the case.
I want to be independently wealthy.
Yeah. Let's do that instead. I think I might be like maybe a veterinarian.
That's a good one.
Yeah, I do really like animals, but then I also think like I would be so sad to like also have to be around sick animals. So I don't know if I could do it. I think veterinarian is up there, and otherwise maybe some kind of, I don't know, now like seeing so many people making a career out of sort of YouTube channels or like social media, like creating these platforms around their interests. If I'm like, yeah, doing any like some sort of YouTube thing around something that I enjoy, like I really like cooking, so like a sort of just sustaining myself based on that. I like gaming as well, video games and stuff. It's really kind of cool to think about that those are actually options today that I would have liked to entertain if it was more common back, you know, like let's say 10-ish years ago. Yeah.
Makes a lot of sense, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, so at last, would you please give an advice for all the international students, whether in English, or if you want, you can do it in your language.
But advice for, I mean, I think one of the most important things with studying abroad or spending time abroad is, I mean, or let's focus on studying abroad. Of course, usually, like, you know, academics are, you should focus on your on your academics. I should say that as a professor. But also to think about, you know, what you learn. What are the skills you actually acquire from living in this, what is a foreign context for you? right? What are the things you learn in terms of communication, talking to others, listening to others, and really think, try to think proactively about that, and you will be really proud of yourselves. Like, there are so many things that you learn, and so many ways that you change. You know, just think, just like imagine, because the contrast is that you would never have left your home country or maybe even your sort of home city area, which means that you would never really have to engage with any kind of foreignness, or you would never, even more so, you would never have to explain your own sort of background or identity or contextualize that. But just by like going abroad, interacting with other people, explaining where you are from, you know, maybe explaining cool traditions and, you know, other things from home foods, sharing that with others, like that just opens up such an entirely new, you know, vocabulary for you and so many skills that you wouldn't otherwise have, and like instrumentalize that and make sure to put those things on your CVs and you know, in your application materials and really also think about that as, you know, that is an important addition to the sort of academics that you're engaging in here.
No, that's really great advice.
Yeah, and I was really want to ask about, like, earlier to ask you, like, you said you are really confident when you're in US already. So that is also kind of my problem. Sometimes I feel like I'm really not that confident here, like feeling hesitating and like confusing about like our identity here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would say that as a senior, like, I think every freshman comes in, I'm sure, Professor, you can attest to this as well. Like, when you come here for like the first time, you know, your first couple of months, your first year, you always feel sort of, you know, out of place. But I think that when you're the oldest guy on campus or the oldest girl on campus in 3 years, you're going to be like, yeah, I feel completely at home. I'm ready to leave here, you know.
So okay.
I'm sure that goes away with time. I'm sure there's far less seniors who feel that way than freshmen do.
Yeah. And also, though, something to add on to that, and then maybe also to you then just personally, like, especially in the US, never be afraid to ask questions.
Mm.
Like, Americans are so helpful. They're so talkative. Like, if you ask them a question, they will go to great lengths to answer that, and like in detail, you know, so you never have to worry about it again. Like, that is the kind of like hospitality and willingness to help.
Yeah.
That I have encountered in this country, I had not before. Like, I was more used to a slightly more sort of cold European.
Yeah.
Right. Sort of, you know, where people, like, if you ask them a question, they're like, why are you talking to me? whereas here, it is much more like people genuinely seem happy when you ask them questions. So also to then really, like, lean into that. If you feel insecure or, like, not sure how to do something, just ask. Because people are I would say the vast majority of people are more happy to have been able to help you than they are judgmental about you asking, you know, a question. That's my perception, at least, of it.
Okay.
I think that's also great advice. And I think that's a good note to sort of wrap things up as well. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the Global Expressions podcast program and for this specific episode. A huge thanks to Professor Baygirian. I hope that I pronounced that right. And thank you as well to Angel.
Thank you, Reeb.
Yep. Awesome. Well, thanks again, guys. And we hope you guys join us for our next episode as well.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for having me.